Hey everyone, welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. Thank you for joining us this evening. We are so excited to have you here with us and to be talking about understanding autistic and gifted learners. And I have a very special guest, Allison Bruning from Academic Warriors. And she's also a best-selling author. And I'll have her tell a little bit about herself because she's got a mixed background that all has pushed her in this direction to help very special children. And she has a lot of knowledge to share with us tonight as parents, as educators, and just people that want to understand these kids that we so often misunderstand. Just welcome, Allison. Thank you for joining us tonight and taking time out of your very busy schedule as we were talking about before the broadcast began.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so excited about this. I've been telling everybody about this. I love helping special needs students. It's so personal, near and dear to my heart. I am autistic, and I didn't find out that I was autistic until I was an adult. Mm-hmm. I always knew there was something going on with me. My IQ is 140, so I'm not only autistic, I'm actually what they classify as genius. And so, and I have a learning disability in math, so I totally get these kids.
Exactly. And, that's such a gift because when you can see from the other side and they get it, mm-hmm. they, you know, kids can just really connect with you when you empathize with them. And I know I've talked to other parents who talk about their learning disabilities on my team as well, and even myself, you know, you just have this tender heart that, you know, you're willing to try with these kids to get to help them to learn because you know what it's like to struggle, to really struggle. And so that's such a gift.
I actually fell into this Academic Warriors 3 year old. This is our third school year. And we specialize with homeschool parents.
Yes.
So this was really a fluke that came into me. I had my own private school in Indiana at one time for the gifted. I taught at a gifted school in Indianapolis. And I left the teaching field to go work on my PhD. I had just finished my master's at Full Sail. I have a master's in screenwriting. Creative writing for film, and I was already a best-selling author, and so I wanted to expand my writing. Mm-hmm. I'm not that girl that sits by and doesn't want to learn. I'm one of those people that just soaks up information like crazy. My best friend at the time, she's the one, she says, Allison, you need to go get your PhD. And I said, are you kidding me? We just got our master's a year ago. Are you crazy? Go back to school, really? And she said, no, Allison, you need to go. And so I did, and I just felt really towards getting my PhD in education. I'm a certified Texas educator. I've been certified since 2007. I count the years now and go, oh my goodness, I'm not that old, but I feel old because the state of Texas does not have my certificate anymore. Now that I'm K through 4 generalist, and now it's K through 8 generalist in Texas. They pumped it up. And so I went and worked on my PhD, and I didn't think anything about it. I came back to Texas. I started working in a public school. I had been newly diagnosed with autism, so my specialization was autism and research strategies at working with these kids. Mm-hmm. And my question was, as I had noticed, all the research is on kids. Where are the adults? You know, these kids, they do grow up.
Right.
So I did research and I found out that half of our population commit suicide by 18. And I was so appalled by that. And then I continued and I said, okay, so what happens to the remaining? And I found out in their 20s that the half of the remaining population is incarcerated or is doing drugs, alcohol, risky behaviors. Well, my husband, before he became legally blind, he was a correctional nurse. He's worked in the Texas institutions and he's worked in Kentucky Mm-hmm. And I went and I asked him, I said, is this true? These can't be true, these facts. My population's in jail? Why is my population in jail? And he said, oh, you should see all the things they come up with. I agree with that. Most of my prisoners have been gifted. And so then I was like, okay, well, common sense says if you know a problem, then you're probably trying to find a solution. You should find the solution to the problem. I mean, we teach that to kids all the time.
Right.
So I thought, okay, I was going to write my thesis on this. So I did my research and I was trying to figure out what are we doing as a society to fix this problem? I found out absolutely nothing.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, she should be back real soon. The connection's a little iffy here. Whoops, she popped out. So so Allison, it'll be back soon. Thankfully, the program that I'm running right now will allow her to just pop back in. But just fascinating that the research that she's done, and she does have a book written on her research as well. So let's see if I can get her back here. Oh, there we go.
There, sorry. Yeah.
No, that's okay. I think your internet just kind of flaked out for a second, but that's okay. We can bring you back. So, but you have a book that summarizes all of this research that you've done.
Well, I wrote a book called Elsa. It's based on a real life story that happened in my family. Mm-hmm. And because the autism was a family secret. Mm. No one had ever talked about autism being in the family. And so when I was trying to find what had happened to my relative, and so I wrote the book Elsa. And in this book, you see the autism through the eyes of the person who has it, and how he struggles on a day to day to connect with the woman that he loves, and this all takes place before we knew about autism. This is early 1900s when they thought the autistic people were crazy. Mm-hmm. So, I wrote that actually before I went and got my PhD. Before I started my PhD, what had happened was when I was doing my PhD, I was so appalled that we weren't doing anything to help this population. So I told my husband, I said, would you be upset if I leave my PhD? I just postpone it. It doesn't mean I'm not going to come back and do it again. I just feel in my heart that we have to do something to stop this. And he said, you have to follow your heart, Allison.
Wonderful.
And so, yes. I left 3 years ago and I started Academic Warriors. And the first year we were together, I had kids in Australia and New Zealand and England. And my English parent told me, this is not just an American problem. Mm-hmm. She said she pulled her autistic daughter out of school because they were having the same problem over there.
Right.
So
I want to pull up your website here.
Okay.
Yeah. Academic Warriors. It's a very fun website, by the way.
thank you. I did all the superheroes
and the graphics are really cool. But yeah, you offer classes worldwide for kids.
I do.
That are gifted and on the autism spectrum, and you get them. And that is such, an important piece to that puzzle. We're going to talk tonight about helping parents to understand what you do, every day in getting that and how to teach them and why traditional methods don't work as well. Because we can try the same things over and over again. And if they aren't working, why do we keep doing them? So that's exciting.
Academic Warriors is not your traditional teaching. It doesn't follow traditional teaching. And that's because it doesn't work with this population. And while I understand that some of the teaching methods might work with the general population, I call them Gen Pop. it doesn't, it doesn't 100%. Actually, the teaching methods I use will stress out the Gen Pop because this is specifically for these kids.
Awesome.
When I found out about the problem in England, I also found out from parents in Australia and New Zealand that it's the same problem down there. Mm-hmm. So this problem that we have is worldwide.
Exactly. And, you know, when I was at the Global Home Education Conference, the within the top 3 to 5 reasons for every country was special mm-hmm. needs. Why parents are pulling their kids out of school by the droves and turning to alternative and homeschooling is like the number one thing that they're turning to because they realize it's the only way they can customize their child's education. They have control over picking yes. teachers like you who get their kids, not just going to another private school that says, yeah, we'll fit them in. Well, they don't fit, mm-hmm. do they? That's the problem.
No. And I don't even standardize test my students at all. Mm. Standardized testing will do 2 things to this population. One, they'll get so much anxiety that they'll stress themselves out and they won't test accurately.
Yeah.
Oh, or two, they'll rush through the exam and not give an accurate assessment because mm-hmm. they're rushing through it just to get it done.
Oh, you hit the nail on the head. I have all 3 of my children would be what you would call 2E learners. My oldest is autistic mm-hmm. and gifted. And yes, even in college now, I see him do that. I mean, he's learned to cope with it. He knows he has to go through the system, but he gets so stressed out. And it's a process for them to learn how to deal with that. But they don't have to start out that way. You know, I think that's what we need to tell parents is that, you know, yes, if your child is going to eventually get to that college stage, they do need to learn how to test. But we don't need to kill them when they're in kindergarten so they're ready for college.
Yeah, they also, I've had gifted learners take a standardized test and this kid was in fourth grade. He was supposed to be in second and he took the Indiana Standard exam. We were just testing to see if they could do it at the Gifted Academy.
Right.
And he wrote, "You have 3 spelling mistakes on your exam. You guys need to go back to school." And he wrote that on the front. Oh my goodness, I'm so glad we did not have to turn this into the States. So we were like, "You can't do that." But miss, it's right there. They spell it, they're right there. And I'm like, "You can't analyze the test. You have to use the testing studies." But they're wrong. And they're adults. And I was like, "Okay, yeah."
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They will do that.
That's hilarious. Oh, so I just want to let our viewers know too, if you have any questions for Allison while we're going along, definitely write them in the comment section. We'll be able to see those, pop those up on the screen and get those to her to answer as well. So so as we're going through here, let's start talking about personalizing education. And how would a parent even approach that? Or how do you as an educator with your students approach that? And how can parents use some of the techniques that you've learned that work and apply them into their own homeschools?
Well, one thing you have to realize with 2E students or straight on gifted, first of all, I am not a gene. I may have a genius IQ, as your students may have that too, but we are not walking Einsteins. Even Einstein had a learning disability. Mm-hmm. So one of their preconceptions is when I tell people my IQ, they think that I know everything under the sun.
Right. It's not connected already with knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
2 different things going on here. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And so one of the things I tell parents is don't pre-assume that your child is going to get what their age level is supposed to get. I mean, if they're gifted.
I love that.
Actually, the first thing.
Yes.
The first thing I always ask parents, would they tell me, "Oh, yeah, my child's been identified gifted." So then I say, "Okay, what's the learning disability or what's the physical disability?" Because one thing you have to understand is we are unbalanced, gifted adults and children unbalanced. There are more 2E people in the world then there are straight on prodigy gifted that have it all together. I think like there's 95% of us and only 5% straight on gifted. So as soon as you get that diagnosis, you should be looking at, is there something physical wrong, mental wrong, learning disability wrong? And
that's a very good point, because they can hide it so very well using some of their giftedness. I know my daughter does that very well, and she's the most scattered person. You don't think she is. And she kind of, you know, has a bit of an issue fitting into groups, but she hides it as a girl. But it stresses her out still. And, but yes, for some kids, they hide it much better than others. And so, yeah, it's definitely, that's a very good point. I love that. Don't pre-assume and look for things. Jace has a question here for us. Let's see if I can hear. It says, are your classes only for academically gifted children?
No. So we understand special needs is a spectrum. So we have ADHD kids, and we have kids that have anxiety issues, learning disabilities, or maybe they're physically sick and so they get delayed. We have a student right now that has a physical issue that has limited, that is causing him to miss a lot of school in public school. And so he doesn't have the knowledge that he needs. So he's with us now, so he can take the computer with him whenever he goes to the doctor. So, yes. But if there's a difference between a child having a disability than a child who chooses not to learn.
Yes. And that's a very good point, too.
We do not take the children who choose not to learn. And we also don't take children from parents who are controlling. Because the philosophy is that it is a triangle for there is a connector, and you have to have that connection between parent, teacher, and child in order for it successfully to go. In the public and the private schools, they'll tell you, as soon as a child walks in your door, that the child is yours, and let the parent go off to work and have their day, and don't worry, don't talk to the parent.
Right.
I'm a certified teacher. I've been told that all these years that I've taught in public school system, not just in Texas, but in other states that I've taught in. And so doesn't work. It does not work at all. You have to have that team mentality and that connector between the parent and the teacher and the child. I didn't give birth to your child. I don't live with your child. So
good
you
point.
Live with your child. So you see the child every day. Also, one thing you have to understand is when they walk through the public school or they walk through the private school, their personalities are going to do a complete backflip than when they are at home. They're going to be a completely different child. So
yes,
having them at home, they're comfortable.
Talking about how segmented we are as a population, that we are a different person every place we go, and we focus on one compartment of ourselves wherever we are. You know, it's like when you go to church, you're that church person. When you go to the gym, you're that gym person. When you know, and it's like, we weren't made to be that way. We were made to be a whole person. And I think, you know, just like what you're talking about, is you want that child to be functional everywhere they are, you know, learning, whether it's parent or you, teaching them. I love that, because it teaches our kids to be whole. And that learning is everywhere. It's not just when you're with your teacher. Definitely.
And we don't throw them in a classroom setting. We cap our classroom at 10. That's the max. We won't go above 10. But if your child is not ready to be in a social situation with other people and they do better one-on-one with the teacher, then we're going to give them a private school, and we will not charge you extra for private school, because it's not your, it's nobody's fault that the child needs one-on-one. It's the same price if you do private one-on-one as it is if you put them in a group setting. And if they're not ready to go in a group setting, then we start in private, and then gradually we add a kid to their class, and then we'll add another and add another, and we'll make it go higher until they can settle with the within the till they can do the group setting thing.
Right. So you're teaching social skills as well as academic skills and other things. That's amazing.
We teach social skills. Yeah. Social skills, critical thinking, analytical thinking, life skills, and academics. And we roll that all into one package. All into one.
That's, yeah, mm-hmm. because that's how we function again. Casey Davenport just said, hello, ladies. And so I wanted to make sure we said hello back.
Hi, Casey.
So that's great. What else do you have to share about personalizing education? Anything in addition to?
Well, yes, we, I don't test the kids, but I do work closely with the parents to find out where the kid is at. Mm-hmm. And we do something that private and public schools don't do is we diversify. So, for example, I have 2 sixth graders there, and they are working on a high school level, which has been down a little bit to middle school, science and history.
Okay.
But they have problems in, sorry about that. Today's my birthday and my niece is texting me, so I'm flipping it over so I don't listen. She's trying to FaceTime me and everything.
Happy birthday to Allison. I'm being here.
I'm trying to stay focused. I really am. But she's like, Tia, answer. Tia. She calls me Tia. It's aunt in Spanish. My husband is Mexican-American. And I'm German American, and I'm Appalachian Irish, like Appalachian.
Wow.
So in Scottish, yeah, I'm from Ohio. He's from Texas. It's a big mix. But yes, but so my sixth graders right now they're doing middle school history and science, but they were really having trouble. Like when we were doing their writing, mm-hmm. I couldn't get them to even write a concise paragraph. So I realized, wait, we have a learning disability here in writing. So I bumped them down to third grade language arts. They're still in sixth grade. They're still sixth graders.
Right.
But I identified the need. I'm accommodating.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I will do that with your child. If I see that there's an issue there, I don't wait to the end of school year and go, okay, this is how your child did. This is what you need to work on, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to address it right then and there.
You're so frustrated. Yeah. If you can tweak and change right as you see the issue. And I think that's a good point for parents too, as you're working with your kids, don't be so stuck in your curriculum that say, we just got to push through this, you know, make it to the end of the year and then we'll reevaluate. There were times where I just said, we're not even touching this year. We're going to back.
Yeah.
I mean, we just have to, because it's for my own sanity and my child's sanity. And, you know, when you're working with more than one child, as you mm-hmm. are, that, you know, that doubles or triples the issues as well with that.
Yeah.
Lizzie has a question. She asked, are these online classes?
They are. They're online classes with a live teacher. So when you come to our website and you choose a class, it's not like those other onlines where, okay, you let your child read what's on the screen and mm-hmm. do the assignment. Mm-hmm. We use Zoom, which is kind of like what we're doing right here, where I'm in front of your student or another teacher's in front of your student, and we're talking, we're communicating with your child. We're teaching them the lesson live. Mm-hmm. And they do homework. They have a set school schedule when this is happening. The beauty of it, though, is that we don't schedule classes. We schedule where after you buy the course, and we get with you and schedule mm-hmm. around your schedule. Because awesome. We understand that homeschool kids, they have a lot more freedom to do things. Like we have a professional actress. One of my sixth graders, professional actress. Mm-hmm. She does commercials and film. So when she's on set, we don't hold class because she's too busy. Mm-hmm. We've got 3 kids who are professional actors on theater, and when they're on set, or when they're like, I had one that was in tech week for 2 weeks last week and the week before, and he just finished class. So, and then he's going to Egypt to go visit family on this Friday. So he'll be gone for 2 weeks. So, so they are online. We are flexible. We do have a school schedule, but, I work with the parents. So if the parent says, hey, Allison, we're going here, but we can't take the laptop, can you give me some curriculum? Mm-hmm. I'll give it to you.
That's awesome. Casey had another question. She said, I'm new to this site. Do you do all your classes online? I have twins who have IEPs in place, and I'm considering homeschool for high school. Need all the help I can get. You know, we hear that all the time.
Yes.
Just, you know, parents saying, I know I want to do this. I know this is the best option, but I just need help. So
I will definitely help you, because it's definitely personal. It is all online. So the beauty of it is that you can determine when you want your child to be in class. We are not accredited, and we're not accredited not because, well, we are a good school.
And it's accreditation, because it really means nothing. I want parents to understand that. It really does.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Because, yeah, if you are a parent and you're homeschooling, the majority of states do not require accreditation for you to give your child a grade, for you to write their high school transcript. Definitely, you know, and do you work with parents with their transcripts as well? Or
I do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So every state is different. Like Alabama will give a high school diploma to homeschoolers, but the state of Texas will not. They want GEDs. So
Yeah, but if you homeschool in Texas and the parent gives the grade, it's equivalent to the transcript coming from a public school. So there's ways to get around that, definitely.
And the reason we're not nonprofit is because a lot of people don't understand this, but nonprofits have to have a school board. So the thing with the school board is if you get the people on the school board can actually fire me as principal and rewrite our standards and rewrite our program completely. So in order to protect your child and the methodology that we're using, we cannot be a nonprofit. We run like a nonprofit.
Right.
But we are not.
Take donations to help kids to get funding that can afford your program.
We do.
So, yes. She said, what about Kentucky? Yes. That was,
I'm not sure. I mean, Casey, I can help you. I can pull up the state standards. Because
if you go onto our website at fedhomeschool.com, we have all the state's homeschool laws on there as well. Yeah. But Allison's site, if you didn't catch it, it's academicwarriors.com. And but yes, those laws are easy to find. I'm excited our new website is going to make them a lot easier for you to find than it is right now on our current website. But yes.
I do want to make a notion to your parents that we do personalize it to the fact that I will look up the state standards and make sure your child is performing at state standards. Now, if that does not mean that I will not go above to the next grade or go below. Because in order for them to be at the standard that the state has, they have to have a firm foundation. So if they're missing something,
exactly,
I'll make sure they get that. And also, your parents have to understand, even though we are the United States of America, and we are not unified in education.
Exactly. Yes. Every state sets their own education law.
Even your certifications... Even your teacher certification. I cannot. Well, in the state of Texas, they have a compact with New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Louisiana. So I can go to those states and use my Texas certification. But when I moved to Kentucky, I couldn't use my Texas certification in Kentucky. I would have to recertify. In the state of Indiana, I was in the process of that. And then Indiana changed their system where they were requiring all out of state certificate teachers who are certified to go back into teacher training and go through their program.
Wow.
This is why I ended up back in Texas.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of states will do that depending on the amount of teachers they have available, and, you know, they'll lower their standards if they have a lack of teachers. It just tends to go. Yeah. The only thing across the board that you can be sure of is the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act. That is a federal law. And so that does affect some of the special needs services offered through the public schools. But again, each state can appropriate those funds differently, and they choose to do that. So,
and also you have to understand proportioning. The public school system receives federal funding. So the only way that they receive federal funding is they have to meet a set of criteria that has been given by the state in order to be recommended for the federal funding. Mm-hmm. And so, and part of that is population control. And so you may be sitting here going, well, my child is special needs, but they didn't say he was, or they didn't say they didn't diagnose. Well, they didn't diagnose because they had already met their ratio quota for how many special ed students they had in that school that year. And they can't go above the quota or they'll lose their federal funding for the school.
And I've explained that to so many parents, and it just, you know, makes them irate that, you know, we parents aren't told that. And they go, well, why, you know, why is my child, you know, if I take them to a private tester, they test that they have this disability, and when I go to the public school, they say they have nothing and they can't offer many services. Yeah. That's exactly why that happens. And it's infuriating that, you know, we have so much of our tax money going to these schools and yet our kids can't get services that that they should be getting. So, yeah.
Your certified teachers know because we're taught.
Oh, I know.
Taught when our, yeah. But one question that we always get is, why do the certified teachers not understand my special ed kid? Well, you have to understand the levels of certification. I'm a generalist, meaning that I could have been special ed. They wanted me to go special ed, but I didn't. Generalist means that I do special ed. I do and gifted, high ability or gifted are considered special ed. So that falls into that, which I've argued that case. But anyways, that means generalist means I do special ed, I do gen pop, I do second language, I do every kid. Then you have your special ed certification, which is gifted and special needs. And then you have your certification for second language, your multilingual, so your immigrants are coming in. Which I'm bilingual in Spanish, but I didn't go that route because I believe to think if I went mainstream, I could hit everybody. But I went to school. Yeah, that's very naive, people, let me tell you. Because I went to school for 2 years. I'm a post-bac. I have my degree in, it's supposed to be archaeology. I'm actually a trained archaeologist, guys. So I've been on 5 archaeological digs and 1 paleontologist. I went and did my post-bac, which meant that I did an internship instead of student teaching. But even as teacher training, you get about 2 or 3 years. So out of that 2 to 3 years, while I was doing my teacher training, I was also trained to be a reading specialist, which I found out I moved to Texas with 2 classes away from being reading specialist. I moved to Kentucky, and Kentucky doesn't have the program. I never finished masters. I ended up getting a master's in something else. But, basically what I'm saying is in that 2 to 3 years of training, you only get 1 hour of special needs training as a generalist teacher. This is why your classroom teachers do not understand how to deal with this population.
Right.
And even after they're certified, you have to do continue education.
Right.
And most states will ask for proof for you to take them. I see most states, and I should not say this, but Texas doesn't ask you to prove anything. So you could pay the state of Texas, and if they choose to come after and ask for your CEUs, then fine. If not, I always did them. So, you know, but if your CEU in the state of Texas, you are required now to go and get 6 hours of training in special needs. That's it.
6 hours.
Out of the 6 hours, that's it. That's all you're required. Once you get that, you're done. You don't have to get any more special needs training. So this is why your classroom teachers do not know how to set this population. Right. They just tell you, go run to this. If you need any help, go to the special needs teacher. That's what they tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're already overloaded already. So you're not going to get much help. Yeah. Jace had a question about how much time for your academic warriors, how much time is spent on classes and homework? I guess that would really depend on how many classes your students
depends have. Because we have 3 different systems. We have the private school where your child is enrolled as a private school. Like I said, we're not accredited, but that's because, you know, we want to maintain this program. We don't want to be systematic. So if we went nonprofit, then we would have to be systematic and the program might disappear. And we don't want to do that. So if you decide to just take a course, like have your child take a course here, a course there, then every class is an hour long. Based about 45 minutes to 50 minutes. We are working with Classcraft, which is a program. You can find more about Classcraft on our website. They are a program out of Canada that allows kids to create superheroes. And then the kids can earn points and powers and stuff in the class. And we use that in the classroom to teach social skills and critical thinking. And the kids absolutely love it. And so we do that as well. We're also working with Big History Project, which is a curriculum developed by Bill Gates. And flylady.net, which is a lifesaver for any autistic kid. She donated all her curriculum to us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we have organizations that are looking at this new teaching philosophy, and they're going, wait, she's doing something awesome. Scholastic recognizes this as a private school. Pizza Hut Book It program recognizes this as well. So if you have a kid that's grade K through six, they can participate in Pizza Hut with us. So they homework wise, like I said, it just depends on the kid. It depends upon what they need help on. I'm going to give you some techniques. If I see something that I can't cover, I'm not a miracle worker, okay? So I do help kids, but I can't fix it in 1 hour. So I need to, so sometimes I'll give you extra things you can do at home. I'll give you some ideas that might help you at home with your child. That's
awesome. Because, you know, yeah, but that partnership again, like you were talking about, is, you know, it seems to be your focus. And that's so great because, you know, our kids get so disconnected from, you know, well, this is school and this is what I do with mom, but this is what I do with that teacher. But if you can equip the parent to continue on with what you're doing in the classroom, it further gives that child the, you know, the boost in self-esteem that I can apply not only what I'm learning and how I'm progressing just in this class, but in the other things in my life as well. Yeah.
We're also a year round school. So we have four quarters instead of two semesters, So we take breaks in between, like, our winter break is 3 weeks. Okay. Our summer, and then I think we have a summer break for 2 weeks. They're only in school for 1 month in the summer. We understand that people all over the world, you have to realize also Australia and New Zealand are winter, but it's their summer right now. So that's one other reason we keep it. We flip it. So also we know that kids travel all over the place. We want the kids to explore and do like what they're passionate about. So we're flexible with that.
Good. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you have to build that in. And so you were going to talk about, you know, different ways to kind of personalize that. Is that something else as far as, you know, building in their interests? And how do parents, you know, work towards that? I know a lot of parents have, you know, asked, well, you know, they're so stuck in, you know, I've got a curriculum, we're going to do this. I think they almost feel inadequate to move outside of that box, you know, on their own. So do you have any helpful hints for parents on how to, you know, feel a little more comfortable with exploring maybe where their child, you know, needs to get outside that box and explore some different ways of exploring their giftedness?
First of all, do realize that no two curriculum is going to work the same for every child.
So true.
What you see on our website, when you look at one of the courses, you don't see we're going to do A, B, C, blah, blah, blah. What you see are course objectives. You don't see how I'm going to teach it. And the reason is I understand that every child learns differently. there's a theory of multiple intelligences. I love this theory. When I learned about it in teaching school, I was like, oh, this makes sense. It basically says that every child has about 7 different ways that you can learn, but not everybody excels in things. So you may have that child that is running around touching everything. I have that child in third grade right now. One of my parents here for Stockton, he's always touching things. And he's always building and dismantling and stuff like that. Well, then do something tactile with the kid. Also, realize that that kid, even though he's not sitting still and like this the whole time, doesn't mean he's not hearing you. He's paying attention to everything you say.
Exactly.
It just drives us crazy as adults, because we're taught you must sit here like this the whole time listening to your teacher. Give them a fidget. Give that child a fidget. It's okay for them to fidget like this while they're talking to you, because then they're not focusing on their hands. They're focusing on you more. Because their hand is preoccupied. I even fidget. I was in Sunday school class today fidgeting last Sunday. You know, there's toys in our Sunday school class, and I'm not the only one that fidgets. I was playing with magnets. So, but I know, what can I say? I still do it. I'm 43 and I still do it. So, my husband's ADHD and he has to have a fidget, and it's really sad because, I'll be sitting here working and he'll be fidgeting with my mouse pad. So I'll try to be teaching and I can't find my mouse because he's moved it with the mouse pad. So I'm like, Delphine, please just give me my mouse back. So we have like little toys and stuff around here. So it's okay. If you've got to make accommodations to me for that child, that's fine. One of the other things that we did for that same kid is because he's artsy, he's visual. And I totally get this because I'm this way. When we taught paragraphing today, we are going to use his mom and I are going to use different color pens. One color for the topic sentence, one color for detail one color for example one, another color for this, you know, you can do that. If you have that child who's an actor, get their own, act it out, make them act like the character in the book.
My middle one was like that. We did costumes and everything. And, you know, all of a sudden he's like, I don't get this. You know, you could read the book to him and he would never engage with it. But when you got him to act it out, all of a sudden he's like realizing what's happening. And he's like, really? They did that? You know what? It's like, yeah, you're engaged now. We're discussing. But definitely you really have to, you know, we did unit studies when my boys were younger. I've graduated 2 already that are both the 2E type learners, and my oldest liked to build. So he always got the more hands-on building, go out and measure how long Noah's Ark was and tell me how many driveways it was, you know, that type of thing. And then the second one was the acting. He always made costumes. But we would tweak the unit study assignments for the kids, even though we were studying the same thing together, based on what their preference was to engage. And I think that's what you're talking about. And it's so important that we do that, because not only are you engaging them in the lesson, but you're helping them build skills that they're going to use because that's where they're gifted.
Also, another thing is you have natural born leaders. Leaders are born, guys. And those are your kids that they just want to go off on their own and do their own thing. You can literally give them the assignment and they'll go off and do the assignment by themselves without your help. Don't look over their shoulders. We do a lot of independent work at Academic Warriors. In fact, one of my high schoolers right now is doing independent reading work. I'm just meeting with him for 15 minutes a day to make sure he's on target and to be there if he has any questions. So I'm checking up on them while they're doing independent studies.
Right. So you're coaching and guiding and definitely those things.
And you need to do that with your kids. I know it's so, like, as a parent, you're like, I want to make sure they're doing it right. And you feel so bad because that kid goes off and does their project and you're like, did I do this right? Did they learn it? Did they, you know, I never send a kid on independent study until I know for certain that they've got the content. And that's then I send them on it.
Yes, because sometimes we can push them to that and say, like you were saying at the beginning, don't pre-assume. We can assume that they're ready when really they're not. And being able to have some checks and balances ahead of time to make sure that they're going to be successful. You know, that's so important because you don't want them to fail, because the repercussions coming back from that, that's really difficult to get them back on track and to have them start learning again, because they're going to go, oh, I'm just going to fail again. You know, and it's that anxiety that kicks in that we're talking about at the very beginning with these kids, you know, on the autism spectrum and that are gifted. Anxiety's high. Mm-hmm. So what are some ways, you know, as we're hitting our last 15 minutes, I want to address that. If you're willing to talk about it, you know, what are some ways that we can help our kids to get through some of that tough stuff with learning and anxiety and, you know, just helping them through that as a teacher, as a parent? What have you seen that works?
Well, the first thing I would say is that autistics, we get fixated on stuff, you know, and it's really easy as kids to get fixated. They find something and they're like, oh, this is so cool. And we, as teachers, especially in the public school and private school, we try to give them like, okay, Johnny, you got 10 minutes of this and then we got to go do reading. Well, Johnny's going to go to reading, but Johnny's body is there, but his mind is still back at that station. Right. So don't, you know, one of the other reasons we're be around is because yes, there are deadlines. I understand kids how to meet a deadline. Okay, I get that. I'm not saying that's not important. But there is a time where if that kid is fixated on it, don't take them off the fixation. Keep feeding them information. It does, you know, I tell parents all the time, I can't tell you how long that child's gonna be fixated on that topic, but they will come down off of it. Once they have consumed enough information on that topic, they'll quit and they'll move on to whatever you want them to move on to.
Right. And what
so just play along.
It really is. I mean, we look at adults that can focus on something and that can stay concentrated on something, and we call that good. But when a child does that, what do we call it? Bad behavior. You can't change.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, look at your children too as what this, you know, could possibly be as they get older and what an advantage that is. So I love that, you know, you give them that leeway, not that it's an out, because, you know, they may want to be fixated on something because they don't want to do something else. But, as a, you know, as a parent and a teacher, when we spend enough time with the child, you know, if it's a true, drive or if it's an avoidance thing.
And one of the things, I'm real with the kids. You know, I tell them straight up, look, the world is not going to understand you. Just accept that as fact. This world does not understand us. But that does not give you any right not to be productive members of society. So you just have to be yourself. Because I'll tell you, I did this early on before I knew I was autistic, mimicking. We will mimic just to make sure that we fit in with society. I was working with an autistic today that she was going down the rabbit hole of depression. And she said, I don't fit in this world. Nobody understands me. And I told her, I said, well, yeah, they don't. Yeah, but you're a superhero. So, you know, in the comics, when you look at, I tell the kids all the time, do people understand superheroes in the comics with their superpowers? Never. And that is you. So you have to be true to yourself. You have to stay with yourself. And so I'm constantly telling these kids, we cannot bubble these kids, guys, away from society. We have to make sure these kids understand they will not be accepted by society. And that is okay, because there are other kids like them. There are other adults like them. That's what we're trying to do at Academic Warriors. We're trying to make a connection. I'll tell you one of the best, and I got this because when I taught at a gifted academy in Indianapolis, and she only hired people who were gifted. And I have always felt like I'm the only one that's struggling with this. I didn't know what it was growing up, but I knew I had a learning disability. I knew that. I knew I was socially awkward, but I was very active. I was in Girl Scouts and 4-H. I was rock climbing, backpacking, camping. I was outdoorsy. My mom, when I was in college, she says, Allison, you need to grow up and be a professional. You know, no more. I'm not that girl anymore, you know, but I'm the girl. I full-time RV. So of course I'm back to my roots. So, you know, but one of the greatest blessings I've ever had in my life, other than that wonderful husband I'm married to, is that academy that I took at. Because I was surrounded by others who were autistic, gifted, disabled somehow, you know, had the mental issues. And I really felt I belonged. I found a place I belong. So if you can get your children around other children who are like them, they don't have, you know, you're autistics with autistics, you're autistics with special needs. We put these kids together in the same classroom. And I cannot tell you how many of these kids come up to me and tell me, you mean there's other kids like me?
Oh, yeah.
These, your kids do not understand. They think they're the only one in the world.
Exactly. And I think that was the greatest gift. We made friends with two other families whose kids both had, you know, autism. And my kids are still connected with them to this day, you know, as adults, young adults, because they finally found somebody who got them. And, you know, your kids don't have to have a lot of friends, but if they realize that they're not alone, that is huge. It is such a huge advantage. I love that, you know, you have that story, because we do, we feel like, you know, and when I was growing up, when my son was diagnosed with high functioning autism, my parents turned around and said, "That's you, Peggy." And I said, "Yeah." I mean, I wanted to commit suicide. I share on my blogs about, you know, struggling with that for so much of my life. Just because I didn't fit in. I could not talk to people. I had to script everything. You know, God has done some amazing things in my life that have brought me to where I'm at now. But yes, to know that there's people like me out there.
Definitely. I found it by accident. When my husband and I married, he said, "Allison, you're really odd." And I'm like, "I know." I don't know what it is, but I'm odd. People don't assume I have autism because I'm so public. I mean, you can Google my name. I'm all over the place because I've done interviews, book signings, whatever. I'm very public, but I do get to a point where I'm done with people. I have to cocoon myself. But my uncle, and you talk about God blessing you, God has really blessed me. We went up to Ohio to go visit my family, and my uncle told me, he said, "I really need to talk to you." And I said, "Okay." He said, "Do you know the family secret?" And I was like, "There's a family secret? I must not know it then, because I didn't know there's a family secret." What am I missing here? and he told me, he said, "Allison, I was diagnosed with autism. There's autism in the family." And I said, "What do you mean there's autism in the family?" And he said, well, he didn't say autism, he said Asperger's. I call autism now, but I have Asperger's, which they call high functioning autism. He said, "Yeah, my mom had it. My kids have it. They're not diagnosed." And my aunt, his wife, she sat down with my husband she went, "Does she do this, 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 and this?" And Delphine went, "Yes." And my uncle said, "Go get tested." So we were living in Kentucky at the time, and we were in Louisville. And so we went to get tested in Louisville, and the lady came out and she said, "Your IQ is off the charts." And I said, "Okay." I said, "What is it?" She says, "130. And you are so brilliant in the arts." And she says, "I know you have Asperger's, but I can't diagnose it." "Well, if you know it, why don't you diagnose it?" And she said, "Because I deal with children. I don't deal with adults." So
that's pretty common. Really, there's very few adults that actually get diagnosed. I mean, from what I hear, most people say, oh yeah, my child was diagnosed and that's when I realized, oh, that's what that is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I called my uncle and my uncle was like, I said, that's what they said. And he said, you can't get up. You got to go get diagnosed. He says, I swear you have it. Mm. And he said, honey, if you get the diagnosis, then you can figure out how to fix yourself. You're not going to fix it 100%, but you can give modifications in your life that'll help mm-hmm. you succeed in life.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, yeah. And so I went to another center in Louisville a year later and she said, oh yeah, you're really smart. And I gave them some of my artwork and they were like, I said, yeah, it's 130. She said, no, it's 140. And she said, you have this, 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 and this, and this, and this. And I said, wait a minute, I'm an educator. You just gave me the symptoms of high functioning autism. She says, yes, but I'm not going to put there because if I diagnose you with autism, then you're never going to get a job.
Oh,
and you need to be teaching. It took us. I know. I was just like, seriously? And she said, you're something called spatially gifted. And I was like, what the heck is spatially gifted? So I was working on my PhD at the time and I found out I'm an artist. So I'm like, oh, okay, well that makes sense. Arts, languages, and literature. That's what I'm gifted in. And so it didn't take until 3 years late, well, about 2 or 3 years later, we moved back to Texas and I went back to the doctor who has been my doctor since I was in college. And he was good friends with my husband and then we were telling him, he's the one that started us on this whole journey, figuring out what's medically going on with me. And because he knew something was up with me. And I told him, I said, it's autism. I said, but I can't get him to put it on there. I have a heart condition and I have suppressed immune system and I have the learning disability in math. I'm a mess. Okay. And PC also said they'll put all that on there, but they won't put the autism on there. And they were like, oh, and the two miscarriages and blah, blah, blah. And he's all like, well, this is crazy. He said, you should have the diagnosis. If that's what you have, then that's what you have. And he wrote it on my chart. So now I have the diagnosis and it took my family doctor to do so. I hear stories like that from a lot of people, a lot of adults. Adults struggle more, like you were saying, to get the diagnosis than the kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, well, the training for the testers is done for children. And I mean, they've started doing testing a little younger now than when they used to, when my son was diagnosed, you know, that's about 17 years ago. You know, nobody even talked about it at that point. I mean, I remember a principal calling me into the office and saying, there's something wrong with your child. You need to go get him tested. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, I'm just a bad parent. That's why he acts the way he does. You know, I was blaming it all on myself. And so the diagnosis was a relief, but there was maybe two books published at that time, you know, that even talked about autism. And so the resources that are out there now for parents are wonderful. And, you know, things like what you do, it are just starting. And, you know, I see this as something that is going to keep growing and growing. And just want to thank you that you're pouring your life into these families and to the lives of these kids that really need you and need your perspective.
Well, thank you so much.
So much.
One thing I do want to let you guys know also is that autism is displayed in women and girls differently than boys. And also when Hans Asperger was doing his testing, he did not test girls, not a single girl. Really? It was all boys. Yes. And so what recent research is showing is that girls are more social than boys when the autistic girls are, because our biological makeup is different than the boys. So one of the mistakes we make as society is that we see what the boys are doing and we base our diagnosis on the boys. And we're just now getting more research on girls with autism. So don't give up. If you think your child has it and it's not diagnosed, don't give up. Press through like I did.
Yeah. And I love what you said at the beginning. You know, we were talking about, you know, if you have a child who's gifted, look for that disability. There is one. and girls do cover it up more. So if you have a girl that excels in one specific area and tends to be highly gifted, my daughter, I know, my 14-year-old does it so well. And she turned to me one day and she goes, "Mom, is there something wrong with me too?" Because I always talk about my boys. You know, my one was diagnosed with high functioning autism and the other one with dyslexia. And she's like, "So what's my thing?" Yeah. It's like she finally realized it. She goes, "Yeah, I've been around enough teenagers now. I know that I don't, you know, act the way they do." And, you know, so we had a nice talk. But yeah, it's they, for them to, you know, to even just verbalize it. But like you said, you know, when you work with students, to say there's other people like you, and, you know, and really it is a superpower, you know, and I think that's the one thing that I showed each of my children uniquely, what their superpower was. And Academic Warriors is such a wonderful name for your school. Because they,
no, thank you.
Yeah. They definitely,
I named them that because I think that every child that is special needs, autistic and gifted is an academic warrior. Yeah. We have to push through more than helps. Yes. And your child will give up. They will get depressed at some time. And you really have to watch them very carefully. Yes. And one thing about girls is we're not going to tell you when we're depressed.
Yeah.
We're not going to vocalize it. It's going to be internal. So watch that daughter very carefully.
Very moody.
And
definitely.
And especially the teen years.
Yep. On our website, spedhomeschool.com, I have a whole series on depression. And it's written from the perspective of me having it as a child, and with, you know, now knowing the backside that I was on the autism spectrum, and also working through it with both of my boys, and just what pulled us through. You know, there are things that you can do as a parent to focus on truth, to pull them through that. And again, it's telling them, you know, what is true and what are the lies that they're believing. We cycle so much through our minds, and gifted kids can cycle it so much better because they're gifted.
Oh, yeah.
And they do everything better. Unfortunately, they can, you know, do that, that self-defeating mantra to themselves better too. So,
I went through that in high school. So,
definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, Allison, this has been a wonderful conversation. We've filled an hour, and I know our parents have just gotten so much good information from you. And I just want to make sure that they know that they can go to academicwarriors.com, that you have classes and you have information for parents on there, some blogs. And I saw that you had a buy one, get one deal. When I pulled up your website, there was a pop-up on there. So definitely check that out.
The blog is not written by any adult. Those blogs are written by our students.
Awesome.
That is a student-centered activity. So
very cool.
I don't have blogs that help parents. I mean, I just gave it to the kids so that
Well, we have blogs that help parents on our site.
So
they can go there.
I mean, I'm not saying I don't have anything to help the kids. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can message me also on Facebook. I do keep up with my messenger very well. All of the registered parents, we also have a Facebook group just for our parents who are interested in Academic Warriors or are already active. We do have a monthly, a yearly membership. The first year is $25. The second year is $15. You get my personal cell phone number. You get access to Scholastic. There's these little flyers that the schools sing out, and it's specials on Scholastic books. Mm-hmm. Well, they weren't offering that to homeschoolers at all, but they do offer it to us.
Great.
So you get access to that same thing.
Very cool.
And Pizza Hut Book It program. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of things you might want to go to the website and check out. And you can send me a message anytime and I'll answer you.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Allison. And also, Academic Warriors is on the Sped Homeschool website, one of our partner organizations. And when our new website is done in a couple of weeks, I'm excited. We're actually going to be putting this video on there as well, and the podcast, so that when people go right to our website, click on you, they'll be able to interact with you right away on some videos and find out more. So
wonderful.
So that's very exciting things coming up on our end too. So thank you again for your time. This has been so fun. I want to also thank you, the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America, for partially funding this broadcast. And make sure that you check out our website at also at spedhomeschool.com, and also our support group here on Facebook. Or if you're watching somewhere else, you probably could be watching also on our YouTube channel. You can go over to Facebook and check out our support group there, because where we're keeping the conversation going all week long. And next week, joining me is Lizelle from EW Said. They are an interactive website that has free videos that help you get your kids discovery learning about different things that they may be interested in. And it's a free resource, but Lizelle and I are going to be talking about preparing for the future through discovery learning, and how our children are being prepared for careers that don't even exist at this point. And how do we do that? And so that's an exciting thing that we're both really just can't wait to discuss, because our world is changing so quickly. We have to teach our children how to learn, not how to memorize things. And so that's gonna be our focus next week. So thanks for joining us. Thanks again, Allison. And thank you, all of you.
You're welcome.
We'll see you again next week, everybody. Have a great night. And thanks for watching Sped Homeschool Conversations, or joining us on our podcast or our recorded session of this broadcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night.